Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our weekend wrap for round two. 2017 is off to a flyer for South Australian teams, and we'll talk all about it over the next 45 minutes. And when I say we, I'm joined by absolutely no one at the moment. Poor old Macca is not feeling well, so he's an absentee. But as for Nikki, she's just nowhere to be found, and one wonders what she's gotten up to this weekend that's made her late. But hopefully she joins us over the next little while, and if not, join me on chat or flick me a tweet on AFL Crowcast and keep me company, because otherwise it's going to be, as Valus puts on the chat, 45 minutes monologue, you got this. Well, last year I had to do it once, Valus. I think, and it was a boring 45 minutes monologue on the Fremantle game, so at least we've got something a bit better to talk about tonight. But yeah, hopefully I can make it as entertaining as possible for you over the next little while, and if we make it to 45 minutes, I reckon we're doing well. Anyway, let's start off with the round's results. And on Thursday night, we had Richmond and Collingwood facing off, and it was a reasonably entertaining game. Richmond getting up 99 points to 80. I thought Collingwood were actually going to win that game. So they just lack something up forward, don't they? And until they get that sorted out, you just can't see them winning too many games. We had the Bullies and Sydney in the grand final rematch. And probably predictably, the Western Bulldogs got up over Sydney 110 to 87. Bullies seem to be travelling a little bit better at the moment. Sydney perennially slow starters over recent seasons, and again, not looking like it in the midfield, although it was an improved performance as opposed to their previous effort against Port in round one. We had GWS thumping Gold Coast 160 to 58. I don't know what's going on with the Suns down there, but I'm telling you right now, I don't think that Eid's going to last more than another 4 or 5 weeks if this is what they're going to dish up every week. They look divided. They're not playing for their coach. Ablett doesn't seem to want to be out there. And it's probably in hindsight a big mistake that they didn't let him go at the end of last season when he said he wanted to go back to Victoria, because he's just going to run around, go through the motions and pick up his paycheck for the next 6 months, I reckon. But GWS accounted for them pretty comfortably, and I wouldn't say that that signifies their return to form, but it certainly would have got them back in the groove. So West Coast getting up at the death over St Kilda after St Kilda held sway for most of that match. Poor kicking by the Saints and a shocking free kick count towards West Coast. Lots of bleating about our game after Saturday, but yeah, the later match over in West Coast certainly proved that home ground advantage is a bit of an issue for the umpiring department in the AFL, and something they're going to have to look at, because that free kick count was horrendous for West Coast against St Kilda. The Bombers got up, making it two in a row over a gallant Brisbane. Brisbane don't look too bad at the moment. They're motoring along all right. Again, a good midfield and some youngsters down the spine. So you'd have to say that they're on a good trajectory. Bombers two from two, they're up and about, but haven't really played. I mean, given how Hawthorn are on the decline, they haven't really played anyone of real quality yet, but good luck to them. They're going all right. The Cats getting up over the Kangaroos by a point. North Melbourne held sway for most of that game. And I was actually shocked when I saw that Geelong got up by a point. So they're on two zip as well. Melbourne and Carlton played out what was almost a nil all draw already, 86 to 64, Melbourne getting up. And the little brothers down the road cleaned up Fremantle, who looked like an absolute rabble. And I reckon I said it to Scorpus on Thursday night that I felt like Rossy Lyon might be under the pump, even though he's got a couple of years left to go on his contract. And I wouldn't mind betting that there's a fair amount of thought going into what they do with Lyon at Fremantle at board level. If they've got some money down there that someone wants to dish out to pay him out, I don't reckon it'd be a bad idea, because I really don't think that he can take this group any further, and I think he can only coach one style of play, and if I was Fremantle, I'd be looking to shift him on, but financially that might not be possible, I guess, because he's got a fairly hefty contract down there and 2 years to go, I reckon. All right, obviously the Adelaide Crows game is the one that we want to talk about, and in light of our recent history against Hawthorn, it had double importance. Not only was it important for us in terms of our own ladder position, but a bit of a mental a hurdle to overcome, I reckon, against this mob, who still are a quality side, but are clearly on the decline a little bit. And as we should, we got up over them. 16 goals, 17, 113, to 13 goals, 11, 89. Margin in the end, what's that? That's 24 points. Actually, it should have been 30 points, because Puopolo's goal really doesn't count. But we'll talk a bit more about that in a little while. Look, some stats. The head-to-head stats, so they out-disposed us 410 to 368. They were very handball-happy, 198 kicks to 212 handballs. We corrected a 1-to-1 handball to kick ratio that was evident at half time. Ended up 194 kicks, 174 handballs, which is, you know, getting around how you want it to look. But where we really beat them is in the air, surprisingly. We had 90 marks to 81, but our marks inside 50 were a key. We had 17 marks inside 50 to 10. 22 contested marks to 6. So when you put those two numbers into the overall marking number, you see that Hawthorn really did try to possess the ball, as they always do. But we forced them to handball a lot more than they normally would. Generally speaking, they'd have a lot more uncontested possession with their chip mark. But after listening to me at halftime, Pikey got the boys to get up in their faces a little bit more, and as a consequence, we forced them to dispose of the ball in a little bit more hurried fashion. As a consequence, their transition often broke down, which was really good to see. Source won the hitouts against McAvoy, 45 to 40. I thought Source was an absolute mountain on the weekend. Obviously, with JJ going down early, he had to pretty much carry it, although Andy Ottens and, on one occasion, Rory Sloan stepped in manfully. But Source, not only in the ruck contest, but around the ground as well, was fantastic. And I actually had him down as our best this week. I think that's the best game he's played for us for quite some time, probably about 18 months, I would say. Some other stats. I mean, we had, you know, relatively even inside 50s, 55 to 51. We were far more efficient in terms of scoring, 1.67 inside 50s per scoring shot to 2.12. And it just felt overall that our, certainly after quarter time, our entries into forward 50 were a little bit more concerted. Hawthorn tended to roll the ball into their inside 50 more often than not, so particularly in the second half, and they didn't, as a consequence, get a lot of clean looks at the ball. Gunston in particular didn't get much of it at all, and Roughhead only occasionally got the better of Hardigan, so it was a good effort by our defence, I thought. And I think Talia's game, whilst he does still look a little bit shaky with ball in hand, I thought his defensive efforts were really good on the weekend. We won the clearances 39 to 37, so again, a break-even situation. Our rebound 56 to 29, and that showed how we reset after quarter time. First quarter, we were chasing Guernseys fairly much, and it's not effective against Hawthorn. They'll just chip around you and just have you chasing them around all game. But after quarter time, we regrouped, and we certainly structured up across halfback. And we broke down a lot of their forward thrusts across that line, and were able to run out through the likes of Hampton and Smithers and those blokes. They it was a really good coaching effort, actually, by Dom Pike, and a good effort by the players to be able to adapt to a different set of circumstances and really show that they have more than one strings to their bow. And I know that Pike in his presser said that he was very pleased that they were able to find a different way to win, which is what I think most of us as supporters have been crying out for an Adelaide team for quite some time. Still no Nikki. So thanks to those who have joined me on the chat, Valus and PJ Crows and Ben. Thanks very much, guys, for joining me. Fire your questions in. I've got screens popping up left, right, and centre, guys, so bear with me if I don't see your comments straight away, but we will have a chat amongst ourselves in the absence of the lovely Nikki, and we'll have to work out some sort of punishment for her when she does finally turn up. PJ Crows mentions the tackling. We had 40 less possessions but 83 tackles. And you know, PJ, that was really after quarter time as well. When we started to push up at them and regroup in defence when the ball was turned over instead of just chasing them around, we were able to meet them head on. And I thought our tackling was excellent. Sloaney, obviously, with 16, was just a mountain. I thought Kirtley Hampton's tackling and pressure inside was also good, even though he didn't get a lot of the ball. But generally speaking, once we pushed up to them and once we actually met them face on instead of just letting them run around us, they couldn't break through us. And that was always going to have to be the way we played against them. And after quarter time, it was good to see that we were able to reset and play that style of game. All right, some individual stats. And we had the Chief, Tommy Lynch, 31 disposals, 14 kicks, 7 handballs, 14 marks for the game, if you don't mind, 2 inside 50s, only 7 contested possessions, but that's not his thing. But worked deep as well with 3 rebound 50s. I thought, even though he still looks slightly out of touch in terms of his ball handling and general disposal, I thought it was his work rate was fantastic, Tommy Lynch, and I actually thought that they might try to shut him down when JJ went down, but they went to Tex and double teamed Tex, and Tommy Lynch was able to work up and down the ground on that far side and really provided a lot of run and carry for us and link play. It was fantastic. Matty Crouch, 28 posies. 6 kicks, 22 handballs. It's a bit of a shame for Matt that when the going gets tough and when we start to get under pressure inside the contest, he does revert back to handballing a bit. Not too bad, I guess, considering that we've got a lot of outside run at the moment, but you'd like to see him even up that kick-to-handball ratio a bit. 6 kicks to 22 handballs for mine doesn't damage opposition teams enough, but he kept getting the ball, 4 tackles, 13 contested possessions, 7 clearances, I should say. Not a bad game from Matt, and I thought Matt was actually one of the few that was standing up in the first quarter when we were getting towed up a bit, so a good four-quarter effort from him. Rory Sloan, particularly after quarter time, was a bit of a beast. 25 disposals, 16 and 9, 6 marks, including an absolute clunker up forward in the last quarter. Now, footy-wise, telling me 15 tackles, we all know it was 16, we were counting them off, so come on, footy-wise, it's not good enough. 6 inside 50s as well, 15 contested possessions, 8 clearances. He was my second best, Rory Sloan. I thought his game was fantastic and only second to Source in terms of his influence on the game.
Evening, Brody... Phoenix.
Macca, what are you doing?
Mate, I heard you on your own, so I just climbed off the deathbed and come and join you, mate.
Come on, mate. Come on, mate. That's no good. How are you feeling?
I'm absolutely shit-ass, but that's beside the point. I couldn't leave you on your own, mate.
See, now, look, if anyone wants to witness a gutsy performance, it's Macca's performance here tonight in the absence of Nikki. You know, shades of... What could we compare it to, Macca? I don't know. It's gladiatorial. So thanks, mate, for popping in.
Just call it bravery, mate.
I'll just call it bravery. No worries. Is the missus not home or something?
No, she's home. She's watching that bloody cooking show she's always watching.
Oh, so you've snuck on, because I'm surprised she'd even let you on.
she suggested I didn't go on, but look, you know, I heard you on your own, and look, it was a damn good win, wasn't it?
Oh, it certainly was. It's, you know, I reckon it was as much about a mental hurdle to overcome. PJ Crowe's Lazarus, thanks, that's the one I was trying to think of. It was a mental hurdle, I reckon, Macca. We spoke about that a bit during the week, and it took them a while, but they worked their way through the game nicely, I thought.
Well, you know, I thought the mental stuff is 100% right. It was there in right from the start that they grabbed the ball, they used it their way, and we were sort of nonplussed for a while. And you got to take your hat off to the coaching staff who, whether this has been a prepared move or whether it's just a move they made on the spot, the next move was to clog it, so to stop that. And once we got the game back to an even keel, then started playing our game.
That's right. I was saying earlier that for the first quarter, we were kind of chasing Guernseys a bit. We lost all our structure. And once we started getting in front of them and dropping back behind the ball when they had possession and we were able to actually clog up space and push up the ground a bit and get in their faces, they couldn't get their little chip game going, and it shows in the stats, mate. Their handball count was way up, and their uncontested possessions were way up, but their marks were quite low. So a lot of handball receives, which is unusual for Hawthorn.
Got to take my hat off to Pikey as well, because what he did when they had control of the game with their little chippy game, he backed us with our raw ability to beat them on raw ability, and I think we've showed that Hawthorn aren't the power of the past, because once you go past the score in the first quarter, we actually outscored them 2-1 from that point on.
That's right. And you've only got to look at a bloke like O'Meara, who had, I think he had 36 touches, but I think 30 of them were handballs. And if you compare that to Sam Mitchell's output in the past, you know, if Sammy Mitchell had 36 touches, you know, probably 20 to 22 of them would have been kicks, and decisive kicks as well. So whilst O'Meara got a lot of the ball, and so did Tommy Mitchell for that matter, they didn't seem to hurt us at all.
No, you're 100% right there. O'Meara's in my dream team, so I watch him pretty closely, and I'd say that's one of the shittiest 36 position games I've seen.
Yeah, there was not one moment where you thought, God, someone's got a man up on O'Meara because he's cutting us up. So you're right. Usually 36 disposals is a pretty dominant display, but they were pretty meaningless, really. A bit of a Robert Harvey game, I reckon.
Yeah, whereas Sloaney had much less possessions than that, but what a dominance he had on the game.
Well, that's right. And Valus points out on the chat quite rightly that Sloaney actually gained more metres than Mitchell and O'Meara combined. So, and that's what you want. And that's what we want more from Matty Crouch as well. A little bit more metres gained so you get field position and you hurt the opposition. And it didn't look like we were worried by Mitchell and O'Meara at all, because I never noticed any effort to try and man them up. And in fact, you know, even Will Langford, he had 28 touches as well, and he didn't really hurt us either. You know, combined, those three blokes had 102 disposals, but only 27 kicks. So, you know, if you're only kicking the ball 27 times out of that disposal count, you're not hurting anyone. And I think that's where Hawthorn have lost their grunt, because they haven't got a Lewis, they haven't got a Mitchell, you know, kicking those lace-out passes and cutting through defensive zones.
And the Brazilian boy in the back lines, I mean, he is, you know, he might look great in his clothes and all that, but he can't play football anymore.
The Brazilian boy?
Yeah, he's Brazilian, isn't he?
Who?
He's in the fullback.
Frawley?
No, not Frawley.
Gibson.
Gibson, yeah.
Is he Brazilian?
Yeah, I think he is. Certainly South American.
Is he?
Yeah, yep.
Well, there you go. And, you taught me something.
And yeah, what I was going to say is that he is a massive liability to them. He looked, I mean, he was good when he was surrounded by good players, but at the moment he looked very ordinary. And the other thing that you quite correctly pointed out last week, last time we were on air, was about Gunston spending a lot of time in the back lines across half back. And I noticed he spent an enormous amount of time there again because you've got to give Gunston his dues. He does read the play very well and he does get a fair bit of the ball. But if he's not up forward, well, they didn't have that many opportunities up forward to get goals.
Well, he turns into a very expensive link man across half back, doesn't he? And, I thought Gunston was particularly quiet. just you sure he's South African? South American?
I thought he was.
Valus has just posted on the chat here. Josh Gibson was born in and grew up in Blackburn, Victoria.
Well, serve him right for looking like a Brazilian.
He has direct links to Barbados, where his father was born.
Ah, that's it. Well, how close?
Yeah, that's it. Barbados, Brazil.
Right. Christ, was I close?
Are you still on the end zone, are you? Or had a bit of morphine or something?
Mate, I'm on more stuff than you can think of at the moment.
All right, but anyway.
I just got to say, though, I was a lot closer with that guess there about being Brazilian than that bloody umpire was with that free kick.
Was that the most disgraceful thing you've ever seen in your life? Like, seriously?
I have never seen a free kick to match it because, you know, usually when there's a doubtful free kick or a rotten free kick paid, something's happened. But, yeah. I mean, literally, Pioppolo turned the wrong way, got front onto the other two guys.
Yeah.
They wrapped him up. McKay ended up with the greatest hug on him, did the right thing, rolled him over as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done everything to him.
Yeah.
And, well, not everything, but you know what I mean. And, he's everything within the football laws, and I don't believe there's one person on the ground, including his fellow umpires, that would have thought that he did the right thing.
Hang on, Bill, Macca, I will say one thing. Lee Matthews has come out and thought that it was the right decision. Lee Matthews, was Hawthorn bias. He reckons, you can't jump into his back. Well, if the only thing you've got left to do after tackling a guy for 5 minutes with a no call from the umpire, that's all. McKay couldn't do any more. Like, he'd tackled him, like he said, he'd taken him to ground, like he said, he'd rolled him over, like he said. All that happened in about 5 minutes. And whoever the umpire was just sitting there watching the whole thing. And as soon as McKay ended up on Pueblo's back, because that's where the roll went, he's blown his whistle. I was just astounded by it. It was just unbelievable.
Well, what I'd like that umpire to do is actually watch a few football replays, and he might understand what happens in football, because if most of the tackles that when people go for holding the ball, when they grab hold and roll them over, they end up on top because they've rolled them over and with the ball underneath them, because, you know, so for holding the ball. So there would be 3 million frees in the back, but under that stupid definition. So Lee Matthews, I think that he's become less and less relevant to the game the longer he's been out of it, and he's just showed now he's totally irrelevant.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, last week in our commentary it was saying Scott Thompson will be back soon for the Crows, and McAvaney had to correct him and say, well, you know, Tomo's probably out of it. So I don't think Lee's up with what's going on at the moment. But just back on the Pioppolo thing, I mean, the amount of time it took the umpire to make a decision there, and then you compare that to the one that Rory Laird got pinged for, where he'd only received the ball a split second beforehand and been tackled. And also the very first free of the game, which was to Kyle Hardigan against Ty Vickery, where they're both running down the line, and Ty Vickery grabs the ball, and in an instant, Kyle Hardigan tackles him, and Vickery gets done holding the ball. So if they're going to pull the trigger that quickly on some decisions and then let Pioppolo have what seems like an eternity 20 metres out from goal and then pay a push in the back, it just blows my mind, Macca. Are they cheats? Do you think they yes. cheat?
Yeah, I do think they cheat. Absolute cheats. Nicol, he did not make that decision. I think it was umpire 31, I think it was. And it certainly wasn't Nicol. But Nicol is, he's the guy that absolutely crucified us in the 15-1 episode where he gave 15 to Hawthorn last time and won three to us. And admitted Hawthorn fanatic. And I don't know why this keeps happening, that they keep getting their own umpire, because the free kick count was 22-11 again. And look, we aren't a dirty side and we're not a stupid side. And yet, and when we play Hawthorn, this happens every damn time. And it is not coincidence. To me, what happens is that most of the free kicks that Hawthorn get are genuine, most of them. There'll be one, you know, maybe two or three that are debatable. We got 11. We only got three free kicks in the second half. And what a magnificent team Hawthorn are, that we can be blistering away like that, and yet they can only give away three free kicks for 60 minutes of football. Champion team.
It's impossible. And I'll tell you what, Macca, I'm not much of a... When it comes to umpires, I think sometimes shit just happens. But there's enough of a data set, in my opinion, to make a case. And I was watching when I was watching the game the second time, I noticed a few things. And Nicol's is front and centre on this. It's not just the free kick count. I've noticed things like when Hawthorn have a free kick, instead of getting told to move the ball on after 15 seconds, they generally get about 25 seconds. And yet, when we got a free kick, we were generally told to move it on after 10 seconds. That makes a big impact on the game, because 25 seconds allows... Some people might say, it allows the opposition to man up, but it actually allows Hawthorn to structure up when they've got 25 seconds. Whereas when one of our blokes is getting told to move on after 10 seconds, he's flustered and we haven't had a chance to structure up in front of him. It's those kind of little things that it's the not paying advantage to one and then paying the advantage to the other. Those little things that don't show up on the free kick count are really insidious, and Matt Nicol's does it all the bloody time.
Yep, no argument. And I thought they had quite an influence on the game, because there was another incident, for example, when we got given a free kick, one of our rare ones, and we played on. We were probably about 50 metres further down the ground, but no play to advantage. But,
that's right. Nicol, they'd call it a mark instead of a free kick, and we'd have to come all the way back.
You remember that one? He called that a mark. Now, that was not a mark. He paid that as a free kick interference. And then, having done that, called it a mark.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's fucking cheating. That's all it is.
Yeah, well, anyhow, you know, cheats never prospered. On this occasion, they didn't. And I thought it was only made our win much more meritorious, because we had a rotten start. That's our fault. We've overcome that. We've steadied the game, we've got back on top, and then by the end of the game, we've really got, or not even much earlier than that, we've got our game going, and some of the stuff was brilliant to watch. And I think Hawthorn were very, very lucky to lose by only the amount that they did. And my one criticism of our team is, again, when you have a set shot for goal, boys, it's not that hard just to bring your leg straight through. You'll kick a goal that way.
That's right. You know, the goal kicking, particularly when the game is up for grabs, is a real concern. And both second halves this season, we've been quite accurate. But both second quarters, when we've tried to wrestle back control in a game, we seem to have suffered from the yips. And, you know, it can set you back. It's the difference between going into halftime two goals up or two goals down. And against a team that's on top of the ground, you know, you'd just rather be two goals up. It's the second week in the row, Macca, that I've done the halftime show and been rather pessimistic about the outcome, and then sat and watched the second half where we've blown them away. So
In very crude terms, I thought they'd blown their bolt. You know, Hawthorn. I thought the game, I thought we would win the game from half-time onwards because they'd had their best shot. There was no more, I thought, that they could give us.
Yeah, I just didn't look like we were working well structurally, and I thought we were really missing JJ just in terms of it messing around with our forward structure and also our ruck situation. And I must admit, Andy Otten was an unexpected surprise up forward, and it was fantastic to see Andy get a bit of the ball. He ended up with 17 disposals, 6 and 11, took 4 marks, just great to see him contribute again. Like, you almost can't drop him after that game, can you?
I find it very difficult how you could drop him because he actually did a lot of the rucking as well. He did.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought it was inspired, genius move, the putting Otten up, put him up to full forward, resting up there, and giving Sauce a cutout time to take a rest down again. And I thought, not so much that Otten is a ruckman by nature, but he actually, because he used to be an on-baller, he was pretty good on the ground once the ball hit the ground. So.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so I thought he played a pretty valuable role, and to me, it's very obvious the bloke that's got to go out is Kelly.
Yeah, he's a good, honest player, isn't he, Macca, Jake Kelly? He tries hard. He puts himself in the right positions. I think he reads the play quite well, but his disposal and decision-making is diabolical under pressure. And I don't know whether he has much in the way of footy smarts. That free kick that he gave away to Roughhead, where Roughhead basically pinned the ball to him and Jake Kelly's just got his arms outstretched. I mean, he should know by now that an umpire's looking for him to try and get rid of the ball, irrespective of whether it's pinned to him or not. And to just take his hands away, like that's 80s stuff, and that wasn't too bright.
Well, I reckon, Kelly is honest, 100% honest, and he gives 100% of what he's got to give. And he's very difficult to beat one-on-one. But, as you say, his disposal is way below AFL standard. And at the moment, we're trying to build a team that is pretty slick with their disposal. Not that there weren't errors from some of the other players. I thought that a couple of our backmen there, Hardigan had a couple lobotomy moments, and I couldn't believe Talia. His decision making he had a period of about 15 minutes, and I said to Reed, "There's another one left his brain on the rack when he ran out."
I thought Tiles was good defensively, but you're right. At the moment, he just seems a little bit frazzled with ball in hand, and Hardigan is always a bit of a 50-50 proposition.
Got better as the game went on.
Yeah, it was funny to see him kick it out in the forward and then Hendo give it back to us. That was nice of him. But I thought our small forwards did okay after quarter time. I was really worried that Bruce and Puopolo were going to blow us apart there for a while. But I thought Brown and Led in particular were quite good.
Well, Leddy had the fumbles in the earlies in the first two quarters.
Yeah, he did.
Never seen him fumble as many balls or drop as many marks where nearly took marks. Brown, I thought, was bloody... He's a very hard man to beat, Brownie. I'd hate to stand him.
Yeah. Can I just remind you of something that I've observed with Led? The last time he had a game like that, Macca, was against Sydney in the semi.
Yeah.
Leddy does sometimes struggle when the heat is on.
Well, there was plenty of heat, wasn't there? I mean, at the stage when he did have the fumbles, it really was a game in the balance, and it was high pressure, high octane stuff. And Hawthorn fighting for their lives and us trying to wrestle superiority from them for a change. And it really, both sides were giving 100%. There's no doubt about that.
There are times, I think, when Leddy needs to be accountable and when the play is in tight, and when you play Hawthorn, the ground's pretty tight because they crunch it up a bit. sometimes he can actually just be a little bit wasteful. He still went at 90% disposal efficiency, Macca, and he had 11 and 10, so 21 posies. So he was by no means no good. Five tackles as well to go along with that.
No, good game over
50s. But there was just a period, wasn't there, where he was just a little bit second-guessing himself.
Well, it was a good game overall, and you know, close to best players, to, you know, getting in the best players. But it's just that by his standards, you don't normally see him not take the ball cleanly. He actually somebody you just always expect to be immaculate. And he just, I suppose everybody can have a day where it's just not quite your day. But he certainly did. He came good as the game went on.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. And, you know, when you rack up 40 posies the week before, you can expect some attention the following week. And I think Hawthorn were very wary of Laird being our outlet player. And they played him pretty close. So it wasn't a bad game. Now, the other one I want to talk to you about is D-Mac. A lot of people raving about D-Mac's game. He kicked three goals, a couple of really clutch running goals, which was excellent. But for mine, aside from that, and at half time he had bugger all posies and bugger all impact on the game, I thought it was McCabe back to his old self. And were it not for those three goals, which admittedly had three goals and another score involvement in the passage that got Luke Brown his goal as well, which was excellent. But I thought D-Mac's first half was shocking.
Well, criticism and credit where it's due. His first half wasn't good, and it wasn't up to the standard we require. But the old McKay would never have come out and done the second half. And his second half, well, there was some really match-winning stuff in there in the second half. As you say, those clutch goals. And that long goal when he came bursting through and he kicked it probably around about the 50-metre mark or just outside maybe, that was an absolute bloody ripper, and it just lifted the side.
Yeah, but you know what, Macca? He's played 160-plus games. We shouldn't be jumping up and down when D-Mac does something like that. That's something that's expected of a senior player. And I think, you know, it's one of those things with David that we tend to want him to play well, and when he does play well, we all support him and get around it and all the rest of it. But if he's going to be a consistent player in this team this season, running on the outside, he needs to impact the contest more for four quarters. That said, you know, all of our outside runners had reasonably even sort of stats. I mean, Atkins had 19, Charlie Cameron had 17, Riley Knight had 16, Wayne Miller had 16, Richie Douglas had 13, D-Mac had 13. So Kirtley Hampton had 12, although Kirtley Hampton had 10 tackles. It was a great defensive display by Hampton, I thought. So I guess in the context of our outside runners, and given that we are a high-rotating side, you know, perhaps we're being a little bit harsh, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think he didn't have a good first half. That's acceptable. But I think, you know, he redeemed himself in the second half, and that was the business end of the game that he did put in. So, you know, for me, he comes out even for the day on that score. Yeah. Douglas, I thought, had a poor game.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as last week, was it?
Last week was a beauty, you know. I thought he played an excellent game last week, and I thought this is Douglas back to the form when he was our BNF that particular year. But I would have loved him to have followed up with a game of that particular standard, but that wasn't the case. He just wasn't quite on. And you know, that's fair enough. Players have those days, but it was disappointing the fact that there was such a big disparity between the 2 weeks.
Yeah. Let me point something out to you, Macca, which I've kind of been banging on a little bit the first couple of weeks, but it's really highlighted in this game. Hawthorn's midfield, you've got Burgoyne, O'Meara, Hodge, Tommy Mitchell, Cyril Rioli, Will Langford. They're all middle of the road in terms of their time on ground, between 86 and 79% time on ground. Our blokes, Riley Knight, Kirtley Hampton, Rory Atkins, David McKay, Wayne Miller, Matt Crouch, Richie Douglas, Rory Sloan, all 85 or below Riley Knight had 72%, Curtly Hampton 73%, Rory Atkins 76%, D-Mac 76%, Miller is 77%. Our depth through the midfield is showing up in last quarters. In both games so far this season, we have, and the commentators even made a point of our hard running in the last quarter. And I think it's going unnoticed by the broader community at the moment that because we rotate so deep, we are far fresher in the last quarter.
You've stolen my lines, because I was going to say, their blokes do stay on the ground longer. And by the end of the time they've been on the ground in each spell, they're plodding. But what our blokes do is they gut run. I mean, Riley Knight, some of them, his gut running was outstanding. And, Brown running the whole length of the ground to get that goal. But coming back to those particular ones you're talking about, every one of those at some stage of the game really ran their guts out. Mm. And to the point where you'd have to come up the ground and have a bit of a recovery. So I think this is one of the reasons, by the very nature of the way they play, they force the rotations.
Well, I think you're right to a degree, but I think it's also management, Macca. I think it's a tactic. I think we run very deep, and we run our half forwards and our wings off, rotate them through the bench as well. Because we are noticeably fresher at the end of games. I mean, we ran all over the top of GWS in round one, and they're a bunch of young, fit, talented blokes. And we run all over the top of Hawthorn and Alaska. Let's not forget, it was only, 4 points of difference at three-quarter time or something like that. You know, we looked like we had the game under our control, but it was only 4 points at three-quarter time.
Yeah, but that came out, Phoenix, because of that free kick, because we had the momentum, and that free kick just changed the momentum. And, well, I don't know whether our blokes' asses caved in or what happened, but that they got that goal, and then they actually got momentum up out of that particular free kick. And I think without that free kick, I don't think that they would have got as close.
Mm. No, you might be right. But, the game was in the balance. Even though we seemed to wrest control sort of midway through the second quarter and throughout the third, the game was still in the balance and was still there to be won in the last. And the fact that we were able to pretty much run all over the top of them. And you could see on the replay, with about 10 minutes to go in the last, Hawthorn had nothing left to give, whereas our blokes were still running. So I think it's a real positive for our team that whilst we don't have a midfield full of stars, Rory notwithstanding, we run very deep. They're all quick. They all can carry the ball and gain yardage, and it's a real weapon for us. Surprisingly, I didn't think I'd be saying that at the beginning of the season.
Now, another question for you, Eddie. Otten handballs to him on the boundary line, and I said to my wife, WTF, giving it to a bloke that tight, and he slots it through. I reckon maybe one footballer in 50 would have got that through, if you're lucky, and Eddie just did it as casually as you like. Do you think that could be the goal of the year again?
Well, I mean, he made it look so easy. It's hard. It's easy to overlook that it was actually quite difficult. Do you play golf, Macca?
Badly.
Eddie Betts reminds me of a bloke who, like Jordan Spieth or Jason Day or Tiger Woods, when they're just so on top of their game that they know exactly what they're going to do with the ball. Eddie Betts just looks like that at the moment. He's completely in the zone with his kicking for goal.
Yeah, you're right, because that one where he was about 50 metres out for goal on his right foot, and it ran in, dummied the kick, then dummies to his left, and then gained about 10, 15 metres, kicks about from 35, 40 metres out on the left foot, on the run, and as you say, he just makes it look so easy at the moment.
And even on the coverage, I don't know whether you watched the coverage, but there was a close-up in the last quarter, a boundary side, where the ball's coming to the boundary and Eddie's tracking someone to the boundary, and just a few little quick flicks, and like when he tackles, you can see that he's actually trying to strip the ball and he stripped the ball once, and then we got it, and then there was a little give, and Eddie's tried to step inside, and even you could hear Brad Johnson in the commentary box just having a chuckle, because you knew that he was just like half a step away from getting free and kicking another beauty. It was a really good little snapshot of how Eddie works in close.
I saw that, yeah. I don't know the one you're talking about.
Now, speaking of sidestepping, I do have a little bit of a brickbat for Kirtley Hampton. And I know he's very agile and very quick, but what he's starting to do is every move is a step to the left. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and I was going to raise it myself, actually. Kirtley Hampton has two assets. One is his pace, and the other one is his ability to sidestep. Yeah. However, what he's doing is at the moment, it was what I accused Atkins of falling into a bit of that trap about two-thirds of the way through last year, even when it was unnecessary, he had to do a dummy and try and sell the candy. And at the moment, Kirtley, just worry about getting it to the next guy, because you are good and you can get it to the next guy. And he's going to be very, very valuable for us. He's a very, very good player. But at the moment, he's got a little bit silly, just trying to show us how good he can be. And by doing that, the opposition have worked that out as well, and he's not been good to us,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I noticed that Hawthorn had him worked out, because they'd move to his left every time, and he'd always try and take that little jinking step and then go to the left, and they were there they're waiting for him every time. So you'd like to see Kirtley just play the percentages, and I think, you know, that was the message that we had for Atkins last season as well.
Yeah, and I mean, Miller does a lot of dodgy, but Miller mixes it up with about 37 different moves. You know, he's got back spins. It doesn't matter which foot he gets onto, as long as he just gets on either foot, and his disposal is beautiful. But Kirtley is just trying to do too much at the moment, and he'd be much better off just playing a lot more direct footy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, we haven't had any more updates on Jenkins, although last I heard they've cleared him of any structural damage. He certainly went down like he'd been shot, and I know from my own personal experience, and I think most blokes who have played footy knows that even a bruised bloody rib can take you out for a couple of weeks. So even though there was no broken ribs or punctured lungs or busted spleens or lobotomies associated with JJ going off, ribs can be pretty painful, particularly under the armpit there.
I've had them, and I've got to say it, I'll blow my own trumpet here. I had three broken ribs at the start of a game, and I refused to go off, and I did kick five goals and got best on ground, and then went to hospital afterwards.
I was going to say, but you suffered afterwards.
I did, but it was one of my mates playing for the opposition team, and I didn't really, he was playing for Woodville, I didn't really want to give in that he'd hurt me, which he had badly.
Pride cometh before the fall, Macca.
Oh, yeah, but I will say this. It depends how you cop it, too. Although I had the three cracked ribs, I did struggle a little bit for breath, but I could still play. When I say could play, I did play. But Jenkins, he's a big boy, and and when you say we've had final reports, and there's two different final reports. One says all clear, just bruising, and the other one said there's a slight fracture in one of the ribs.
Oh, and I didn't see that.
No, that was on a different channel. That was on the Foxtel channel I was watching, they came up and said that there was a slight fracture, but. They're about the same time. They've come up with the we've had a report from the hospital. Blah blah blah, and they both said exactly the same thing. Except one said he's got a slight fracture.
Okay.
Then they crossed to one of our players who said, it depends how he pulls up. There's a bit of a chance he might play this week.
Next week. Well, there's nothing on the Adelaide website, and I'm just wondering in your drug-induced delirium whether you might have been thinking about Grant Birchall, who did actually suffer a bit of a crack to his jaw as a consequence of that clash with Tommy Lynch.
No, it was
definitely Jenkins.
Mate, I've got plenty of psychosis going on with what, all the stuff I'm on, but it was definitely Jenkins because they did a direct cross after making that comment straight to one of the Crows players, which my psychosis card doesn't allow me to remember who it was, but he said that he thought that Jenkins might be a chance to play.
Yeah. Now, just as we wind up, because we're on the 50-minute mark, you reckon Sloane's in any trouble?
For which one?
That late or late-ish contact. I forget. Who was it up against, PJ, in the chat? I can't remember.
First of all, you got Lynch against Birchall.
Yeah,
Lynch. And I would be disgusted if that was the case because watching Lynch, he was going to spoil and he's actually averted his eyes away from the player. So he's not targeting the player. And in doing so and turning away, he's elbows to make the...
Yeah, the only problem I've got with the Lynch one is that his eyes went on the ball. I know he's got every right to look at contact. PJ has just mentioned it was Mitchell Sloane's hit. But in terms of Lynch, that's the only problem I've got. I think if anything for Lynch, it'll be a fine, but it shouldn't really be anything. The Sloane one on Mitchell, I don't think that should be anything, but I bet
if it was the other way around, if it was a Hawthorn player against us, no case to answer for sure. I thought that was pretty minor, the one on Mitchell.
Yeah. On Crows Fan Central, we've got a graphic of how the match review panel works. And if people go to crowsfancentral.com and have a look at that, you'll see that if your name's Rory Sloane, you automatically get a week. So I think he's in a bit of strife because apparently his name is Rory Sloane. But on balance, I actually think the worst one was the hit on Jenkins, to be honest, because it was a raised elbow. What do you reckon about that?
Well, it was an elbow that caught him, but you had to watch it in slow motion, really, to see the elbow go out. I don't know. To me, these are football collisions.
Yeah, but if it copped him in the face, Macca, it's a three week holiday, and to me, it really shouldn't make any difference whether it copped him in the face or in the. The ribs. The fact is, there's intent, and he hits him with an elbow, and elbows are a no-no.
But the question is, did he do it intentionally?
I think he did because his eyes aren't on the ball, and you know when sometimes blokes go to feel for body contact, they're expecting body contact, but because it doesn't come exactly when they're ready, they kind of extend their arm out like looking for the contact. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah.
I reckon that's what's happened in this case, that the young lad was expecting Jenkins to make contact earlier and went feeling for the contact as a consequence, and that's brought his elbow out. I think that was probably the worst of the three. I don't think any should result in weeks, but I think if any action should be taken on anyone, whether it be a fine or whatever, it's probably that one on JJ.
Well, I thought, you described it pretty well with what he was doing, and I thought that he was doing more as a protection type of thing rather than an attempt to strike Jenkins. But, look, the way these guys look at things, they seem to have a different set of eyes than me. And so, it's really potluck on some occasions. Some weeks they're as harsh as hell, and other weeks they're very, very soft. But really, I would say, from my point of view, I'd say all clear on the whole game, but who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was certainly at times. There was some incidental physical incidents, but I thought it was a reasonably clean game, and I'm like you, all clear, play on. But as you say, it's fairly hard to predict what they'll do. And as I said, Crows Fan Central, we predict any time your name's Rory Sloane, you get a week. And I'll tell you what, just quickly, and not that this is a Port Adelaide show, but the bloke that Sloane got a week for last year, Brad Ebert, isn't he a punchable sort of a bloke? Did you watch it this afternoon?
I did, yeah.
Jesus. Now, Velis, before we go on, Macca, Velis is talking about gut punches and blah, blah, blah. You've got to harden up, mate. Gut punches are part of the game. But anyway,
yeah,
go on.
But by the same token, you know, if I drop the philosophy you applied to some of the other incidents, well, then they should be reported.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But Velis was saying it wasn't a clean game because of the gut punches. I reckon there were one or two. There was one on Eddie that I can remember. There was one on Douglas Early that I can remember. But by and large, it was a clean game.
Sloane gave one out too. Sloane gave one.
Yeah. I felt like we weren't intimidated by Hawthorn as we have in the past. But anyway.
Not at all once we settled down, no. Just on Port Adelaide, I mean, they played the Witches' Hats today, and I tell you what, those Witches' Hats don't move very quickly.
No, they don't. They're not very engaged, are they?
Oh, seriously, I've got to say this about Ross Lyon, and I genuinely mean this. I think he is the worst coach in the AFL. I'm amazed that Freo have got him signed up long-term. If you look at his history with the St Kilda, he inherited good sides and managed to run them into the ground, and he bailed out because he knew he never brings new blood in, like young new blood. He's happy to take everybody's recycled players, etc., to bolster his team up. And he left St Kilda as a wreck, and he took over Fremantle, where a guy who I didn't particularly rate as being super intelligent, but he had a good performance with Freo, and took over from him, and he's actually going to run him into the ground, in my opinion, and he'll eventually leave Freo in wreckage as well.
Well, I mean, I said this at the beginning of the cast, and I actually said it with Scorpus on Thursday night, and stand by it. I don't think they should keep him beyond this season, and if it means paying out a couple of mil, I'd be doing it, because that club's going nowhere. And I agree with you, Ross Lyon is a completely wonder coach. He can coach one way and one way only. And, modern football has passed his style by. Aggressive running and running at zones and things like that, that kills Fremantle. I mean, Port are the same team plus Ryder than they were last year, and yet they were absolutely able to cut through Fremantle, partly because of their game plan and partly because Ross Lyon doesn't have any buy-in from any of them anymore.
Yeah, I actually thought that Nat Fyfe doesn't look 100% interested in the game. I mean, he's got natural competitive spirit, but he just doesn't look like that fanatical Nat Fyfe that used to play.
Well, and it might come down to a point where you're talking about Nat Fyfe. If I was Nat Fyfe, out of contract, I'd be saying to the board, it's either Ross Lyon or it's me. Who do you want to keep? You know, do you want to keep your captain and an ex-Brownlow medalist? Or do you want to keep a guy who you're only keeping on because you can't afford to pay him out? Who's it going to be?
But I think they've got to be. Haven't they got to be extended to 2020 or something silly like that?
Oh, I don't know. I thought he extended by 5 years a couple of years ago, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. Look, I don't know, but they should just get rid of him. It was the worst decision ever. He asked for 5 years, and we know how Ross Lyon operates. He operates as a mercenary. He left St Kilda for money. He left for tenure. He didn't leave for any other reason than tenure. He was in trouble financially. He'd made some poor investment choices. He had a long-term deal on the table from Fremantle, and he took it. He took the extension because of tenure. 5 years, that's security for Ross Lyon. He's all about the money. He's not an imaginative coach. He's not an adaptable coach. And he's not going to take Fremantle anywhere.
Yeah, I said to my wife when I was watching the game, Fremantle actually playing some of the Neil Craig plan going back for many, many years ago. They got the ball around about just on backwards of centre wing, and this is how Port got their first two goals. Gradually worked their way backwards to the each time a pass of the goal square that goes astray, and there's two goals on the ball, and it's just pathetic.
Yeah, well, the final word on that game, Macca, I reckon, is that when you're only tackling 47 times for a match, you're not interested in playing the game.
Totally true. And look, in fairness to Port Adelaide, we can't rubbish them because they did what they had to do, and they beat Sydney, and I thought that they played outstandingly well that day. And it's hard to actually work out what their game plan is other than hard work. And I think that's probably about what it is. There's a distinct game plan, and we are blessed now with a coach that has the ability to change it to the circumstances that prevail during the course of the game. But watching Port Adelaide, the only thing I can pick up is the fact that they worked their arse off.
Yeah, look, I don't disagree. You know, their powerhouse midfield all had 25 plus posies. The young lad, Powell Pepper, had 25 posies as well. And, you know, he's good for them. He was a ready-made player. Some would say he's got limited ceiling, but he's what they needed, I think, at the time. So he's playing quite well. I think what's actually going to test them against us is exactly what the other two teams have been tested with, and that's our rotation, our depth in the midfield and our pace. I think Port match up a little bit better for pace than the previous two rounds have. But again, a bit depends on how JJ pulls up. I don't expect JJ to play next week. I'd expect him to have at least a week. And that'll be interesting to see what we do, whether we bring Lever in and use Otten up forward as a pinch-hitting ruckman, which is what I think we'll do.
Yeah, I think so.
I think if it was a longer-term injury, they might have brought in Rob or even Harry Deer for a more genuine second ruck option. But I think if it's only going to be a week or maybe 2 weeks, I reckon they'll go with Otten and bring Jakey Lever back in. Jakey Lever played right in the trial.
I think Lever will come in, and as you said originally, Otten to pinch head up forward. And I thought he looked pretty good out there actually. And also pinch hit as a second ruck, and that means the side is relatively balanced, and there's nothing done to unbalance the side.
That's right. And if anything, Andy Otten's probably a better contested mark than Jenkins. So
in my view,
it probably bolsters our marking strength up forward. Obviously, Andy Otten doesn't have JJ's tank, but never mind. I think they do have a relatively good defence Port, same old up forward with them. Robbie Gray's the one that's going to get you if Wingard doesn't. Dixon will provide a contest, and Ryder when he's up forward. But I just think that it's going to be a different game for Port Adelaide next week, and I don't see that they can run with us for four quarters, although they certainly look a lot better from an attitude perspective and from an organisation perspective than they have done in the last couple of years.
And it's our home game, isn't it?
No, it's theirs.
Ah, shit. I still think we could win it. They will have their crowd, and then they play. I believe they play a little bit better to their crowd. But I think it's still early days of the season, and at this stage their enthusiasm is very, very high. They'll be hard to beat, I think. Yep. But I think we can get over them, but I'm not expecting it to be a big margin.
I'm a little bit more bullish than you. I think Port have been flat track bullies the first couple of rounds. They are sitting on top of the ladder, 184% after two rounds.
Yeah, but having said that, Sydney's not a flat track bully stuff.
Oh, they are early in the season. Last year, earlier in the season, they were nothing as well. Don't forget, they're coming off about a 4-week less preparation than Port Adelaide.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
So don't worry about Sydney. They'll be up and about. Come around 10, they'll start to push up again. But the Dockers are horrendous. I mean, Dockers are sitting under 50%, you know, under the Gold Coast Suns, who have been diabolical. So, ladder positions don't mean much after two rounds.
Well, you know, I thought Carlton had a mortgage on the bottom spot, but by God, Frio are going to make a bid for it.
Well, Frio and the Dockers, I think. Frio and the Suns, I think. It's going to be a tightly fought race between those three. And I'm glad to see Brisbane drag themselves out of that race, actually.
And I know we're getting tight for time, but Gold Coast, Gary Ablett, he's barely trying.
Oh, he's a religious man, Macca. And he should be donating his pay to his local religious charity because he doesn't deserve to take home a paycheck at the moment. And the word is that he's pissed off because Ede's playing him up forward. Well, Ede's playing him up forward because he's trying to develop a midfield from when Ablett's no longer there. And Ablett needs to understand that. And, you know, if he wasn't such a tool, he'd be quite happy to go down and sit in a pocket and take his million and kick 50 goals.
His problem is that up until now he's been kingpin up there, and he was given special privileges. He could go down south and have special holidays down there when other players couldn't, etc. And while getting $1 million a year for doing it, and now he's got Rodney Eby, who is a pretty tough taskmaster, and Rodney doesn't take that sort of shit.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, mate, we better wrap it up, eh? Thanks so much for joining us, mate. I know you had to drag yourself off your deathbed, but it was nice having you here tonight, and we're going to have to get into Nicky and work out what the hell went on there, mate. I don't know what's going on.
I'd like to be the one that spanked her. I'll blame it on the drugs, Nicky.
I'm blaming the drugs. Oh, my God.
That was the drugs talking. That wasn't me. Oh.
That was fantastic. PJ, you're going to have to listen during the week for our tips. It's a bit early for that. We've got to see teams first. Don't forget, we've got Tuesday Night Live on... can't believe you said that. Tuesday Night Live. Perhaps Macca's last appearance on Tuesday Night Live. at 8:30 on Tuesday night, we've got Scorpus's preview show at 7:30 on Thursday, and then we've got our halftime show next week at the footy, which is on Saturday night, and then back here next week. You can follow us on Facebook, AFL Crowcast. Follow us on Twitter, AFL Crowcast. If you're listening to us through iTunes, please drop us a review. It helps us with our rankings. That'd be great. And... that's all.
Well, after my last comment, I'll just go and have a top up from the medicine.
Oh, mate. Fantastic. Thanks, Macca. We'll see you on Tuesday night.
Okay, mate. See you. Good night. Goodbye, everybody.